This is a production of Cornell University.
Essay meeting, February 28th, 2008.
Meeting's called to order at 4:45 p.m. Would the clerk please call the roll?
She's excused.
Welcome Rachel Quigley, who's stepping in for Greg Mezzi today. Greg is out of town, and Rachel's going to be sitting in as the Greek liaison. The next item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes from the February 14th meeting. Take those out, get a look at them. Okay, Andrew Wang was at the meeting, so make that change accordingly, please.
Also, Lance Palvey is not a representative.
Yes, Lance Polity, the late Lance Polity. I'll accept any motions.
Acclamation.
Is there a call for acclamation? Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any dissent? The minutes from the February 14th meeting are approved. Next item on the agenda is open microphone. All undergraduate students are ex officio members of the student assembly, and at this time I'd like to welcome anyone to come forward to speak about an item that's not on the agenda. Please come forward and state your name and year for the record.
Hey, John, can you speak to the mic?
Is the mic on?
Yeah, it is.
Okay, great.
Okay. So I went to RPPC as usual to have my dinner, and when I got there, the place was, there were all these advertising for the vagina carnival, which featured the word cunt, very large and very... it was basically everywhere, all over RPCC, and I personally thought it was just a great that this was allowed, because believe it or not, students are not the only ones allowed into RPCC, and it's obviously a very distasteful word that I don't think we should have to be exposed to. So I was just wondering what the policy, if there is any policy on that, is, and. If not, if there's anything that can be done about it. This is not, you know, I support free speech, and things like the vagina monologue, while I personally wouldn't go see that, you know, I don't have to be exposed to it if I don't choose to be. Something like this, I think, just sends this terrible message to anyone entering, you know, any university's property that has the word, that word.
Are you familiar with who sponsored the event?
The Women's Resource Center, and I have pictures of all the...
Okay. And then, okay. We'll Adam.
The student assembly's policy obviously doesn't monitor and doesn't control the contents of the organization. We have certain restrictions placed on what is and is upbound, but certainly something to that degree. We don't control that from a policy perspective.
Representative Hartman.
Yeah. For the posters in RPCC, in order to get there, they had to be approved by Residential Life and SAN. So I guess the best people to be, like, to ask the question to would be Residential Life and ask, should they have SAN in the posters and what their policy is in SAN. So that might answer your question of who you should go to and who is allowed to be posters in RPCC.
Liaison Quigley. Take the mic.
I don't think you guys are understanding the gist of the event. The posters were not really the offensive part. The word vagina is relatively PC these days, but the C words, dildo bowling, vagina cookies, giant vaginas, people sticking their heads through and taking pictures, like, the event was much more vulgar than it, I think it's coming off. So it wasn't the posters and the flyers necessarily that were the offensive part. It's if there's some way to monitor what kind of event is happening and where. Because there really was no forewarning when you walk into RPC with children or your family that that's going to be everywhere you go.
Stein.
Yes. I actually heard about this event and I was completely appalled by it. And I would be more than happy to work with you on this because I thought it was disgusting.
Lavin.
I was just going to say, we can't control the content, but it certainly would not hurt at all to go to this group that is Byline funded. And we do have a certain degree of oversight, so we should will contact them and at least start a discussion.
As Gary.
Yeah, I guess I would agree with some of the stuff that Brian just said. I think that we do have some oversight over the group, that there are bylines funded by us. We don't have any policies per se in the group, besides that there are tendencies, although they should be following campus policies. What I would say is, let me understand this correctly, because I think it makes me confused what you said. You said there were posters that were put up there as part of the event, like the people were there with it, right?
Yeah.
So they wouldn't have to be stamped, they would just have to be approved. I don't even know if the people who oversee the building necessarily look at them, but they would have to be aware that that program is going on. As far as I'm aware, the person who's in charge of sort of the head person who's in charge of this program, it's all freshmen, everyone on campus and just started, but I think she's the person who will contact, she oversees all the building coordinators, building managers for campus life, and work with her on it. That's when those people who are volunteering their help, and that's when other people are doing it.
I'll take two more speakers, McGovern.
Okay, I just wanted to say, one, obviously, again, I guess it's not residential politics, but they were not actually, whatever, so that was the first thing I was going to say. Maybe you should take up with residential life, but also maybe with the group if it really upsets you. But it's important, I think, to keep in mind, too, that this event and events like it are safe sex events that also create open spaces for people and open communities for certain people. So although it may be distasteful to you, for others, it's a really positive event.
Can I respond? I don't see that the word
okay.
I understand that you don't.
We're not opening this up for debate. Coombs will be the last speaker, and then we're moving on.
Yeah, no, I just, I think it's unfortunate. I've been to the Women's Resource Center website, and I read their mission statement. I'm not sure if events like this are in line with that mission statement, which I believe is helping women feel more comfortable on campus and ending gender discrimination, etc. I think that it would perhaps, behoove this body or the proper authorities to, or even the Women's Resource Center itself to re-examine if their actions on campus are actually in line with that mission statement, which I think is a very noble one, and I think events like this are perhaps very ignoble.
Your net ID, in case anyone wants to follow up.
JDF222.
All right. Thanks so much for coming by. Anyone else for open microphone? All right. On to announcements and reports. First is the Spring 2008 Elections Report from Director of Elections, Mark Coombs.
All right. Yeah. I basically gave everybody the statistics last week as far as how many people we have running, et cetera. Obviously, I want to open myself up to questions. The only thing I did want to specify, this is strictly as a report. The resolution that we passed last week in relation to the seats on the student assembly, I was informed by the House of Assemblies that there is a piece of legislation passed in 1985 that established the seats, and until this assembly passes a resolution that specifically redefines those seats, so for instance, if somebody did not want, for instance, an international seat, or they wanted to redefine that international seat, they would have to pass legislation to that effect. I think it was fundamentally, so they're going to remain in place. So even if Resolution 15 is enacted, that'll go in the bylaws. If Resolution 15 is not enacted, it will make no difference because the office and this essay is operating pursuant to the legislation that was set in 1985. So until this legislation passed contrary to that, that will be standing. Has there been questions? I would, about anything in the audience, I've been taking down.
Awesome.
I actually have a question. I'm not sure if Mark can answer the question or who can, about the 1985 resolution. Was that a charter amendment?
Sorry.
I can answer the question. It was not a charter amendment. It was my understanding, based on my discussions with Army, that it's unnecessary to pass a charter amendment. I'm reporting back to you that it's unnecessary to pass a charter amendment to define the seat.
So if I bring a resolution tomorrow that abolishes all seats on the SA, if I bring a resolution tomorrow that abolishes all seats on the SA, I don't need that in the charter. I just need to bring.
I'm gonna table this debate until resolution 15. We are discussing this in unfinished business. So.
How are we? But I'm interested because I'm hearing that
whether or not it's a charter amendment or a bylaw change will be discussed.
What I'm asking you, CJ, is it correct that resolution 15 now becomes inconsequential, like Ari is trying to argue?
It's not there.
It's only inconsequential if it doesn't pass. If it doesn't pass, we'll go into the bylaws. If it doesn't pass, we're operating on what was said in 1981.
All right. Do you want to comment and then?
Can we discuss this during?
We'll move on to this. We do have some other things we have to take care of, and we will get to this in Resolution 15. SWAT announcement from Alon Greenberg.
So the first of what would likely be 3 or 4 meetings for the SWAT announcement is going to be on Saturday at 11 a.m. in Golden Summit Falls. I'll email further information about the exact room which has been confirmed. There will be regular beverages. It should not take the entire 4 hours, but it's going to allow the time to have a discussion and such. If I show up here, I think we'll be able to get on Saturday, at least in part of the time.
What time is that?
Between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. So at least part of the time. You can come and go to the thing very small.
Just as a point of information to the chair, there are Sun elections on Saturday, so anybody who's involved with the Sun election will be able to make it.
Okay. Well, there are 4 events, 4 meetings that he's scheduled. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So if you come, please bring the community member as well. Bring your ideas, and I look forward to another meeting.
Great. Any questions for Alon? Do you have a question for Nasdaq?
I guess the only question that I had to begin about setting this whole thing up, which is what I brought up last, which I kind of upset that there was nothing in the back.
Just yell.
As far as I'm aware, there's nothing yet that has allowed us to charge this group with moving forward. And it's problematic to me, especially because we have people who are not just student body members, but community members and other constituent body members who are taking part in this. And I'm assuming that the money to pay for the food and whatnot is coming out of the Assembly's budget. I'm going to say that as an Assembly member, not only is it my right, but it's also my obligation to engage the community as well as the student assembly in issues which we deem to be relevant to the current state of the Assembly. So while we don't have to necessarily charge the committee,
Alon, yeah. See, any representative can hold an informal meeting.
That's fine. You haven't answered my question right there. My question is that
I don't. That hasn't been discussed in exec. I'm not sure. Maybe the attendees of the meeting can all put in $5. We will update you on that next week.
I have one question though. If we would discuss the executive board, is that a condition to discuss the appropriation?
It hasn't been discussed in executive.
If it is brought forward, it'll be brought forward in appropriation.
Any other questions for Alon? Moving on. I'd like to. I'm pleased to announce that the Student Assembly, in conjunction with the Collegiate Readership Program, the Johnson School, and the School of Hotel Administration, will be sponsoring the USA Today CEO Forum, featuring the CEO of American Express, Ken Chenault. And they have graciously invited us to participate. They're going to put our logo on it. It requires no financial contribution since we already participate in the Collegiate Readership Program. It's going to take place on April 3rd, 2008. at 4:30, so that obviously conflicts with the student assembly meeting. Knowing that, they've invited those assembly members that wish to participate as ushers or attend the event to let me know, and we will put you on the list. There's also going to be a reception. So if you're interested in participating in this forum, I'm going to pass around a sheet, and you can just sign up. But you're graciously invited to attend, and I want to thank Rob and Erwin and Becca for helping put this together and get this event at Cornell. We're very excited about it. Adam has an announcement.
I was forwarded to me by Ryan Benzmazdak. Asked who had requested that I report back. Ryan's request last week about to discuss the MGLC and UAN controversy. And so I drafted a very quick memo that I'll read. Upon request last week, I was asked to look at the circumstances surrounding Andrew Yang's conduct and that of the MGLC. This is derived from Appendix B, where it states that SA Vice President for Finance shall be charged with investigation of all accusations regarding violation of his guidelines to report such findings to the SA. After further examination of the charter and precedents, no inquiry or investigation can actually be initiated until some form of evidence or substantive allegations emerge that the MGLC has actually done anything in violation of Appendix B or their own charter. The only thing you actually asked for presented last week was the fact that they had a response to his emails in a timely manner. And so until there is actual substantive actual allegation with a real violation, I'm going to close that part of this discussion. So if Andrew or yourself wants to give me any emails or anything that actually documents an incident from prior, I'll be more than happy to look at it. The second part, which you asked me to discuss, Andrew Bank's conduct, this is the main issue specifically in this entire discussion. It is clear that he directly and explicitly used his elected position past the court.
Excuse me, directly to the chair. Yeah. Part of the investigation was to investigate MGLC's finances and not
the investigation. The MGLC can look at the entire circumstance as it's involved in more violent funded organizations and the financial requests from you. It is clear that you directly and explicitly used your elected position past the court and voting record in references to future funding laws to influence the financing of your own outside organizations. To me, this conduct smacks of impropriety and runs counter to every principle of equity, fair dealing, and objective representation that you swore to uphold. We just finished the violent funding process. We were with many members of this group abstained from votes in which they had any connection to groups. Now that we have a representative display of disregard for the oath you swore to uphold and utilize your own position to pressure a violent funding group to reverse its decision, is to me absurd. There is a great distinction between advocacy and coercion, especially when dealing with financing and financial oversight. Now, this issue was brought to the executive board by a violent funded group, which is very concerned. Which is very concerned.
Order.
What is the announcement?
The announcement is a report.
This is announcements on the report. Where is the announcement?
The report.
This is the report document.
The report was at the request of Representative Asgary and myself in terms of reporting on the conduct and the alleged misconduct of Representative Wang, and Vice President Gay is reporting on that. Continue.
This concern was brought to us by one of our violent funded groups, which was incredibly concerned about the conduct of the student assembly member with requests of financial oversight. Now, as the assembly member in charge of the oversight and relationship between our organization and our of our violent funded groups, this concerns me greatly, even more so after actually reading the emails by Andrew Wang. And to be clear, this is the only and first time that this has been brought to my attention. Now, the only action I can take is to investigate and report on this incident, but I would hope that the assembly acts accordingly. However, given the idiocy of the concealed weapon resolution, it will be presented later. I don't know.
I'm going to regret saying this. Any questions for Vice President Gay? Nasdaq.
I have some questions. Adam,
you got you.
I don't know what part of that was.
Speakers have 2 minutes.
I don't know what part of that was actually a statement or not. I'd actually like you to send to the entire assembly what your actual official statement was and your actual findings of the investigation.
This is my final.
Excuse me, I'm talking. Thank you. What I was going to say was you mentioned a violation in there. What's the violation? Because you asked for the emails to be turned over to you in the first part of your little spiel, and in the second part you said that you already had the emails and that's part of the investigation. So what did you do a violation? Because I'm going to go read Appendix B.
Appendix B says any violation of the
you will not have order until I yield the time to him. Thank you. Sorry, it's more directed towards him because he's not having to speak.
Okay.
And I was going to actually ask about this because it's about to be March and we haven't had a pen to speak in front of us yet. So I'm going to go look at that and see what exactly violation is appendix B before you can change it. But what's your violation?
The way it reads is that there has to be a violation of the rules as stated in Appendix B. The only rule for the MGLC is one rule they spend their money I actually don't have it in front of me, but the only email that you I saw regarding Andrew Wang's conduct, there were no emails sent to me to actually allege any misconduct.
I'm not talking about the conduct. You have just answered my question. Your investigation doesn't even know what the violation is.
There is no violation.
I just asked you what the violation was. You don't even, you just said a second ago, you don't even know what it is, and now you're saying there's no violation. What qualifies a violation? Can you answer that?
When any violent funded group doesn't adhere to the specific stipulation that we have placed in Appendix B.
What is the stipulation? 15
of that is. For MGLT, they only have one stipulation. I can't repeat it word for word off the top of my head. It had no relation whatsoever to Andrew Wang's email.
Speaker's time has expired. Ackman. Thank you. Stein?
Yes, just quickly, in summary, what did Andrew Wang do?
Oh, my God. Last week I addressed this. There were one of the groups, MGLT president, came to us because there had been a number of correspondence between Andrew and the organization. He had attempted, he'd asked for funding for an organization he's a part of, and then there was a sequence of emails and he was denied from there were prescriptions on them.
Wang.
All right, so this isn't a discussion, but...
It's announcements and reports, and representatives are able to ask questions and...
Actually, point of parliamentary chairman.
Yes, Mark.
Do Robert's rules set out any specific format for addressing specific grievances against a member of a body like our own?
We are checking.
Can Guy get back to you on that one? Can right. We're not going to move forward. Does anyone have any questions while Guy is looking it up?
I'll withdraw. I guess I'll move to end the discussion.
Okay, I will end the discussion. All right, it's over. Yes. It will. Guy will send that out at the end of the meeting. Right. Any other announcements or reports? Announcements or reports. Any other additions to the agenda? Moving on to business of the day, something that's not on your agenda is the NCAA recertification presentation by Vice President Opperman and Vice Provost Feliciano. Thank you for coming.
We're looking forward to a much more sedate conversation.
We don't know what that is. Good luck.
Thank you. We're much older than you are. Try to keep that in mind. So what is recertification and why are we going to do this? We have instituted sports here. They are NCAA certified. That is required in order for us to be able to compete in the NCAA requirements. By a multitude of regulations. It's actually a very complicated set of compliance regulations that they hold all universities to compete in intercollegiate sports to. We were certified 10 years ago, and we get one recertification on the original certification. So we're in our recertification now. The core of the process is for us to do a self-study. So the first thing that we do is we use this year to take a look at what we ourselves believe is happening in the university related to the NCAA rules. We then start a process of feedback, which is part of that, asking the campus to help us understand what they These feedback forms help us form a report. We submit that report this spring. In the fall, we will have a visit from an appointed group from outside who will come next November, this coming November, and they will both review our study and also do their own study while they're here. After that, they will submit their report to the NCAA, and we will hear back as to whether we are researching. Very quickly, we have an oversight group for university steering committee comprised of faculty, staff, and students. That is co-chaired by John and me. We have three areas of study, each with a co-chair. Governance and commitment to rules compliance is chaired by Melvin Ross, chair of the university council. Academic integrity is the second area of study that is chaired by Rosemary Avery, who is the chair of policy and management and the college of human technology. And the third is equity and student athlete well-being, the chair of Professor Dale Grossman from Applied Economics and Management in the College of Agriculture and Life. We began this process in March of 2007. The subcommittees have now prepared their draft report. We will soon be putting that report on the web to review. It's a fairly lengthy report. And now we are seeking input on our initial findings. We'll submit the report on May 1, and as I said, the external review team will come in November. Let us just go briefly through the findings of the three subcommittees, and then we'll take the
Hello. I chair the Governance and Commitment to Rules Compliance Subcommittee. We look first at the issue of institutional control, presidential authority, and shared responsibility. The responsibility for the conduct of the intercollegiate athletics program at Cornell and every other institution, including the staff members and representatives of athletic programs, are included within this topic of study. The second is rules compliance, which looks to assure that staff, students, athletes, and other individuals involved in intercollegiate athletics at Cornell comply with all applicable NCAA rules and regulations, as well as our own rules and regulations, Ivy League and ECAC regulations. Our key findings were actually quite positive. The subcommittee, which was approximately 15 people made up of students, staff, faculty, and administration, found Cornell to be in compliance with all requirements. There were a couple of areas of concern. One was the updating of the athletic department's compliance manual. That is now complete and will be online and available shortly, I understand. Second, the scheduling timely compliance reviews. The NCAA requires compliance reviews internally every 4 years. We will occupy a very brief amount of time, and we are taking steps to ensure that we keep within the NCAA guidelines. The key findings with respect to rules compliance are one, actually, and that is that we are fully compliant with the rules compliance requirements of the NCAA. There was one area of concern, and that is that the bylaws of one booster group or slightly out of compliance with the university's requirements, and that has been corrected, so all booster clubs now have bylaws that comply with internal university and NCAA requirements. Not nearly as similar as your prior conversation.
Through the academic integrity topic, that is the second subcommittee. They look at two areas, academic standards and academic support. Academic standards design and maintain the intercollegiate athletic programs as a vital component of the educational system and consider student athletes as an integral part of the student body. This is actually a core NCAA requirement. It means that the university admits an athlete first as a student. Here at Cornell, we take this one for granted, but in many universities, this is the core of problems for students who are admitted first as athletes, and their education falls to a second standard. So this is one that the NCAA looks at very, very hard, particularly at universities that give athletic scholarships. As you know, the Ivy League does not give athletic scholarships. And the second area is academic support. Protecting and enhance the educational well-being of student athletes and ensure proper emphasis on educational objectives. Again, this may seem simple, but in fact, if any of you are student athletes, you know that the time commitment to be a competing athlete is very, very great. And it is much, much harder for them to get the educational support that all students have a right to expect. So they need to be sure that access to those is made available to student athletes. The academic standards key findings, the subcommittee found that Cornell was in substantial compliance with all NCAA requirements. Recruited student athletes are held to the same admission standards set by the colleges and subject to the same admissions procedure as all students. Student athletes must achieve the same standards as all students to remain in good academic standing, and our good academic standing requirement is higher than the requirement of the NCAA. Our 6-year graduation rate, student athletes do graduate at a slightly lower rate than non-athletes, but not statistically different. Male student athletes graduate at a lower rate than female student athletes. This is reflected in the performance of male versus female student body, so there's no difference by within student athletes. And an analysis by race was inconclusive due to the small cohort. Under academic support, the key finding is that the subcommittee found Cornell in substantial compliance with all NCAA requirements. There was a proper balance between athletic and academic expectations and opportunities. Adequate support services were available to student athletes through referrals to university-wide programs and programs offered by athletics. Academic advising is properly designed to college and is properly assigned to colleges.
Nelson Roth and Rosemary Avery had to deal with it was simple compared to what I had to deal with. The final subcommittee dealt with issues of equity and student athlete well-being. And we looked at three general areas. We in fact had three sub-subcommittees because the review was so extensive. The first set of issues we looked at were gender issues to guarantee and ensure that we have fair and equitable treatment of both male and female student athletes as well as athletic personnel. We also looked at minority issues where the key point is to ensure fair and equitable treatment of all minority student athletes as well as athletic department personnel. And lastly, we looked at issues of student athlete well-being where there's great deal of overlap in the charge of the academic integrity subcommittee. So we were looking at the university's efforts to protect and enhance the personal and educational well-being of student athletes. The key findings in each of these three areas. With regard to gender issues, we have recommended found that Cornell was in substantial compliance with the NCAA expectations. We found one area of concern that we have asked the university to investigate further. And this deals with the facilities for men and women's teams. Competition and practice facilities for all teams are deemed as more than adequate for our assessment. Locker room, training, and or meeting space, need improvement in some cases, some women's teams, those facilities are not exceptional as they could be. Lastly, the women's boathouse renovation was a point of emphasis in the original certification process and all steps to complete it. At this point, we need to be the athletic department does have plans in place to address all of these issues, and that's something that Cornell will be dealing with going forward. We are in compliance with the NCAA standards. Secondly, with regard to we are looking at compensation paid to coaches of men's sports and coaches of women's sports. We were looking at the kind of record that Cornell has generated with regard to recruiting and hiring coaches in these situations. Compensation for coaches of both men's sports and women's sports is determined by using market data as well as other factors, including experience, performance, and retention issues. And with regard to student athletes, the proportion of women participating in athletics has grown
participate in activities to allow them to have input into decision making.
and everyone else would have access to that information as well.
Essentially, what you're hearing is that we were very pleased with the self-study. I do want to let you know that we tried very hard to keep on the subcommittee to look critically at the university itself and study ourselves carefully. That's why you heard us talk about areas that we think are really improved upon, even though we fully met the NCAA standards. We have 1,000 student athletes in 38 sports. We're very proud of the leadership role we've had in this area, and we're very proud of our student athletes. The next steps are in March, actually next week, we'll be presenting to the Board of Trustees and our initial findings. We'll have an open forum, and about a week after that, as our special report goes in May, we will have our study group come here in November. We hope we'll hear from the NCAA about the application. The NCAA can choose to recertify us with no restrictions. They can recertify us with restrictions, or they can fail to recertify us. So those are the three opportunities. You can stay informed by going to our website, www.cornell.edu/NCAA, and you'll find this information as well as all the committee members there, and within the next couple of weeks, you'll find the report there as well. We're happy to take any questions.
Are there any questions? NASDAQ.
Vice President Huffman, the rest of the table, I'm sorry, I missed all the names and positions, but thank you for coming. Just one quick question. What you said at the end, what do you guys think the status would be that you would most likely be certified? I mean, that's only a concern, I think, at this point. When, given you guys have done all the work, it's a student body that hopefully will be certified without any restrictions.
Right, we are hopeful that we'll be certified with no restrictions.
Okay. Wonderful. Thank you.
Vince.
Thank you for your presentation. I don't want to come with the ball from it, but I think it might be from a related issue. I just want to bring up that I don't necessarily agree with the NCAA policy at the hockey game. And in particular, a cheer that's more with our culture, and I feel the policy that Cornell enforces is not equitable with the punishment that probably should result. I'm talking more about a cheer that it goes rough them up, go to you. But some members of the community sometimes divulge from that. I feel revocation of your entire season ticket is not an equitable response in that sense. I feel maybe JA or maybe you lose like a tick, like maybe the next game ticket, but I feel like, I don't know when, like how to approach it as an issue with the proper people are, but I feel that NCAA policies are a little extreme in that sense.
So one of the people I did not introduce, but I'm about to right now, is the athletic director, Noel Stewart. I'm going to turn that question over to him. I'm offered to answer with an XJA, but maybe the athletic director can be more responsive.
Good afternoon, everyone. Bottom line for us in athletics, number one, there's an NCAA rule that clearly states it's a violation to say anything during or immediately previous to an intercollegiate competition that is derogatory for the members of the other members of the opposition or the officiating crew. We also are very sensitive about the use of the F word in line of rank. About 8 or 9 years ago, there were many, many chants and songs that were objectionable, and I'm pleased to say that about 85% of those no longer are used in Linus. But the Gary Glitter song, it really is sort of an inspirational, positive, motivating kind of song for the athletes and for the folks in Linus Rankin for now in Newman Arena. It's terrific when the students say, rough them up, go to you, as opposed to 600 or 700 students in unison in front of little children and families and visitors and the president and other folks who are visiting to use the F word instead. So it's just not what we're about. We don't respect it. And it's in our purview to make it not allowable. Now, for a number of years, we had a scenario where we would let folks have one or two times that they were caught specifically using this type of inappropriate language. And we took ID numbers, and we were very, very lenient for quite a while, but we got to a point where we said, this is not going to go away unless we're really ready to step up and say that that we're not going to tolerate these in the upward alignment. And I know that there are many folks who disagree with that, and I respect your disagreement, but it's up to us to make that decision, and that's the decision that we've made. So we go to great care to train our folks to make sure that they know who said it, that they actually heard it, not that they think they heard it, because we understand it's a very very tough punishment to lose your privileges in line of rank. So that's where we are.
And to be clear, the F word isn't the only banned word at line of rank.
Well, it's number one in the F word.
I know from personal experience. Then, let's go into that.
I think that's because the song is more of a cultural song, and I feel most people that are singing it aren't emphasizing any individual. I just feel, I agree that the F word shouldn't be said in a song, but I feel the punishment of losing your entire seat in the ticket is an equitable punishment for saying that one word.
I appreciate what you're saying, and I understand your perspective, but quite honestly, I believe that at Cornell, we need to modify our culture a little bit to have more sportsmanship and to be a little bit more appropriate for our visitors. And, you know, we just had an incident in Princeton at the away hockey game. Well, I don't know if you guys have heard about this, but during the senior introduction of their first championship team in the history of their program, we basically drowned out their entire senior introduction so the parents that flew in from Canada and all over the country could not hear the introductions, and we were forced, unfortunately, to have a letter sent to the Daily Princetonian and to apologize to the university, because we just erred on the side of not being sensitive to, you know, to their special night. You know, I like to be Princeton maybe more than anybody on this campus, but at some point you have to let people have their celebration and to honor the people they want to honor. So I know that I'm old school, and I err very much on the side of sportsmanship and behaving in an appropriate manner to our visitors. It's also an NCAA rule that we do not disparage the visiting team. And of course, we do that in a lot of ways that I think are in good fun. I guess the word cute, but you know, bad goalie. And some of this stuff is pretty interesting. But to say that's enough, that we don't need that in our culture, in my opinion. So we're following the NCAA rule, and that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Any other questions for the panel? All right, well, thank you very much for coming. We sincerely appreciate it. Moving on.
Anything about something that hopefully will be coming up on the news today? So anyway, on that.
Yes.
Just curious when we're going to be seeing Appendix B.
Appendix B will be discussed in appropriations on Monday in addition to the 9 SASC appeals.
At this point.
And that will be on next Thursday's agenda.
And there will be minutes from all of that.
Okay. Yep. Yeah. Liz will be there.
No.
Counting on you, Liz.
I've been asked by an assembly member to just remind SA members that they focus throughout the meeting, and unless they're using a laptop to take notes or whatnot, I ask that you refrain from surfing the internet or whatever. Next item on business of the day is... Okay, Resolution 15, clarification of designated at-large seats by Representative Hartman.
I just want to point out that this is the Assembly's resolution. You guys have the right to continue with it, but since Ari's new information, I feel it kind of goes against the spirit of why I brought this resolution forward, so I'm removing my name as a sponsor. If anyone else can write their name as a sponsor and continue forward with the resolution.
Would any SA member like to add their name to Resolution 15? Seeing no interest, Resolution 15 is taken off the table and postponed indefinitely. The next item is on new business. It's Resolution 17 regarding concealed carry on campus by Mark and Ahmed. As an addition to your agendas, I did some independent research and I spoke to Scott Grants at the Cornell University Police Department, and he was gracious enough to furnish for me the campus house the campus life house rules, the campus code of conduct rules, and the New York State penal law, all regarding weapons possession and gun possession on university campuses and at the university. We're going to start with a 10-minute introduction by Mark and Ahmed, and then I'm going to open up a speakers list, and then if members of the community would like to speak, Guy will go around and take your name down. But the sponsors of the resolution are 10 minutes. Yes. Fine. New business, unless it is moved to business of the day, unless there is a motion to do so, we are only limiting. There's been a motion to move Resolution 17 to business of the day. Is there a second? Is there any dissent?
Dissent.
Okay. Mark, why would you like to describe your dissent?
I think this is, whether you are for this or against this, incredibly important and it's an incredibly sensitive topic for many people. I think it would be ridiculous for us to jam this through on a rainy day.
There's no discussion. We just spoke, correct? Okay. All in favor of moving Resolution 17 to business of the day, please raise your hand. All opposed. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. What?
No.
You don't get to vote. No. 10-8. Abstentions.
No.
Okay. By a vote of 10-8, Resolution 17 is on business of the day. And I will remind the audience and assembly members that now that it is on business of the day, it can be voted on once we open the speakers list up. Anyone can ask questions or provide an opinion, clarification, or debate the issue. The speakers still have 10 minutes. Go ahead. Starting now.
Well, first of all, I want to begin by saying that I think it's very unfortunate to see somebody did that. I think that it's going to reflect very badly in the media. I think the fact that somebody showed that they want to push this through today, they don't want to leave it a new business, they want to respect Parliament procedure, will reflect how they are. But getting to the actual resolution itself. As I said, this is, for many of us, a very, very sensitive topic. I hope that we can approach it intellectually and seriously. I sent an email recently, speaking to someone who, for whom this is a very sensitive topic and one that I've brought forward to you. I hope that we take it as seriously as our forefathers took seriously the notion of giving us to the free people, for the first time in the history of man, the right for us to bear arms at a personal level. Okay, so getting to the actual resolution. Hopefully everybody will have the text in front of it. I'll actually just, normally I don't do this, and I'm just repetitive since we have a couple minutes. I'm going to read each one of these clause so that in case anybody hasn't gotten to spend enough time with these, they're very familiar with exactly what it says. Whereas recent campus shootings at Virginia Tech and Northern Illinois University represent an intolerable failure of the gun free zone to ensure the safety and the security of the students within. Whereas the restrictions inherent to such a zone, despite the good intentions of the state and university officials in enforcing it, have proven time and again to hurt those who are intended to help and help those whose intent is to hurt. Whereas Governor John Huntsman Jr. of Utah signed legislation in March of last year, which we'll get to in a little bit, allowing concealed carry on all public university campuses in his state, and in so doing, proved that taking such a step is neither radical nor impractical. Whereas there has been no reported rise of gun-related violence on Utah campuses in the preceding month, which we'll also get to, leading us to believe that the fear of lawfully obtained firearms is unfounded and misdirected. Whereas the oft-quoted Second Amendment to the United States Constitution states in part that the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And I want to stress now that we are fully aware that as a private institution, this doesn't directly apply. We're quoting it because we think it's important to the spirit of this institution, as it is supposed to prepare us for life and citizens of this country. Whereas we, like one of that amendment's greatest advocates, believe that any such infringements merely, quote, make things worse for the assaulted and better for the assailants, as I quote, they serve rather to encourage than to prevent homicide, for an unarmed man to be attacked with greater confidence than an armed man. And if anybody disagrees with that, you're not disagreeing with Ahmed or myself, you're disagreeing with Thomas Jefferson,
and the contingent time for
it. I just ask the assembly members to curb the side comments as we're continuing. Go ahead, Mark.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Be it therefore resolved that this assembly strongly urges the administration to take whatever action is necessary to allow for concealed carry on campus. Be it further resolved that should the administration refuse, we ask President David Gordon to instruct the proper authorities to prepare a detailed position paper on this issue, delineating the reasons for that refusal, whereupon this assembly will determine its own response. I think it's interesting. I think it's fitting for me to quote the historian Charles A. Burke. He said, "You need only reflect that one of the best ways to get yourself a reputation as a dangerous citizen these days is to go about repeating the very phrases which our founding fathers used in the struggle for independence." Oscar and I found that out when we opened up our Daily Sun this morning and saw that the Sunset quote, this is speaking of Oscar and myself and all those here today who are in support of this resolution. They argue that we are our own best protectors, that the right to bear arms is a fundamental right. They've got it all wrong. That's a fascinating statement, especially given the report of the subcommittee on the Constitution of the Committee of the Judiciary from the United States Senate of the 97th Congress. It said, "The conclusion is inescapable that the history, concept, and wording of the Second Amendment of the Constitution of the United States, as well as its interpretation by every major commentator and court in the first half century after its ratification, indicates that what is protected is an individual right of a private citizen to own and carry firearms in a peaceful manner. The Sun's beef is not with us, it is with the common notion of the Second Amendment itself. So of course they're going to be against this, they're against the entire idea."
1 minute.
"Of the fundamental right." Actually, how many minutes do we have?
10.
Is it 15?
You have 10. If you want more, we can take a motion to extend.
The argument is that the right to bear arms is a fundamental right. They said that we've got that wrong. Their beef isn't enough. Their beef is with higher sources. As far as Utah goes, because this is, we think this is very important to our resolution, the idea that if we were at the University of Utah right now, we could conceal and carry. And that has been that way since 2004. And I'm quoting to you from a decision from the Supreme Court of the State of Utah, University of Utah versus Mark Shurtleff. This is filed December 8, 2006. And a little bit of an explanation here. "For many years, the University of Utah has enforced a policy prohibiting its students, faculty, and staff from possessing firearms on campus. During its 2004 general session, the Utah legislature passed Utah Code Section 6398.102, a statute prohibiting state and local entities from enacting or enforcing any ordinance, regulation, rule, or policy that, quote,
in any way inhibits," but I'll extend by 5 minutes.
Thank you. "That in any way inhibits or restricts the possession or use of firearms on either public or private property." And in that conflict, the university argued that that didn't apply to them. There was a Supreme Court case. Relying on Article 10, Section 4 of the Utah Constitution, the university maintained that it was an autonomous constitutional entity with the authority to disregard Utah law. In contrast, the Attorney General maintained that the university had no power or autonomy under the Constitution and was permitted to disregard state law. The court agreed with the Attorney General. So to get basically to the point, that allowed people to conceal and carry on campus at any public university in Utah. Now, for those who think that immediately when that happened, obviously mass chaos broke out, people were waving their guns around, etc., I actually wanted to bring this to kind of a lay some of experience. This is the Salt Lake Tribune, August 27, 2007. It's called the Stats Show Few Campus Guns. As the debate over guns on Utah college campuses raged during the 2007 legislature, lobbyists on both sides quoted statistics and provided scenarios to prove that allowing guns was either worsened or improved the hypothetical campus crime. The crime data obtained under the CLEAR Act, which requires all campuses to report crime statistics to the federal government, shows few incidents between 2001 and 2005 and weapons were found or used on campuses, and those few incidents really were students involved. No incident reported during the five-year period involved a student brandishing a gun in a threatening manner, and of the 23 incidents on Utah college campuses involving guns, 7 involved loaded handguns, while the rest involved BB guns or paintball guns. The other incidents involved weapons of energy, butterfly knives, and brass knuckles. Nunchucks? I think this is the important part. No incidents involved an illegally concealed weapon. I want to state that again. No incidents involve illegally concealed weapons. Our resolution applies directly. And you can ask, and you know, I have this if anybody wants to ask us about it, exactly what's necessary to obtain one of these permits in the state of Utah. And granted, we're using Utah because it's one of the few examples we have to offer. It worked very well there. We want to show that this resolution only affects law-abiding citizens. Somebody who wants to come on campus, you know, the reason we think this is so timely is because the recent tragedies have shown that somebody who wants to come on campus and do something tragic and terrible doesn't care about this. They wouldn't care about this resolution. They wouldn't care about the law. They're going to come on campus regardless. This is because I've been right here deeply about protecting the students. This is not an end-all measure. There are a variety of social circumstances and techniques that need to be used. Counselors to look at this, et cetera. This is one way we think will increase the safety of our campus. We care about protecting people, and we are willing to do things that would be written off as radical in order to do that. And that's exactly what we want to stress. This is not radical. Look at Utah. I have the information right here. This is, you know, maybe perhaps it was radical hundreds of years ago. I think that if there's anything about this country, that we've proved to be a great experiment in democracy and a variety of things. I think Utah and others have led the way in demonstrating that what we have before you today is viable, it's practical, and it is the right thing to do, and it's constitutional.
Ahmed, do you want to add anything? 25.
I think Kamar said it best. I'm just going to urge all assembly members to take their time in doing and thinking about this resolution. And I urge you to weigh the evidence. Think about this in
company.
Think about this evidence-wise. Don't think about it, you know, with your direct emotional response. And me and Mark are here to answer questions, listen to people's arguments, and go, you know, take as much time as you need before we go to war.
Guy, you can sit down. You don't have to stand guard. I'm going to let speakers have 2 minutes when they're speaking, and I ask that we keep debate relevant to the resolution and the text of the resolution. I'm forming a speakers list now. Greenberg.
Mark, I was very sorry to see the resolution. Mark, especially, I appreciate our group discussion ahead of time and your articulate thought on the introduction today, too. But here we are, and it's finally hidden. You are 100% no motion serious about this resolution. For me, that's terrifying. Despite what you say, this is not an issue of self-determination, individualism, or freedom. You want to give weapons to students on university grounds, and you think that's okay. These are students that become disoriented and take acceptance and dressing on their established status. You want to place law enforcement in student hands. You envision a citizen brigade of like-minded freedom fighters fighting the students fight right here on this bill. Perhaps on some level, you even think you're doing God's work. On every level, I think you're out of your student minds. You cite the one state that permits concealed carry on campus. I'm going to cite the 49 that do not. Your resolution equates to fighting fire with fire of people's lives and lives. It is a careless proposition, directed, the consequences of which produce questions of life and death for the student violence. As a student, your resolution frightens me as a soldier of battle. If you want to carry a weapon, join a national militia or join the military, as our Second Amendment requires to carry all the weapons you want. That was the intention of the Second Amendment, and that is how it was written. Soldiers train for years under the eyes of trained professionals before they are allowed to draw a weapon, under supervision and limited use. 4 years of training with the Marine Corps, and I still cannot carry a concealed weapon for you. I don't want to. At every level of Marine Corps training, weapons mishandling and an unequivocal disenrollment. And you intend to provide concealed permits to any qualified student who shows up to purchase asylum. Nice. You believe that by arming our student body, you are protecting our student body. You believe that a lone shooter with an illegal weapon will be deterred by the prospect of hundreds of armed students ready to fire back. I believe that when hundreds of students fire back with an illegally concealed weapon, somebody is found to miss. I believe that with the passage of this resolution, you fail to account for malfunctioning weapons from the breach of those with mental health disorders,
30 seconds.
And accidental discharge of those weapons. I believe that with the passage of this resolution, you exhibit the politics of fear. I believe that with the passage of this resolution, a deadly accident is only a matter of time. And I believe that with the passage of this resolution, a student will be killed on this campus, and you will forever live with that on your conscience.
Ultimately, I believe through the publicity stunt, and while creating a new Second Amendment discussion, does so in the wrong venue, and therefore does disservice to the student assembly, to the Cornell College Republican, and to the whole university. Between alcohol, drugs, racism, sexism, homophobia, unchecked ambition, and selfishness, there are enough inherent dangers present on our...
The speaker's time has expired. There's been a motion to extend the speaker's time by how much?
By a minute.
By 1 minute. Is there any dissent?
Okay.
1 minute, okay. Mark and I had 1 minute to respond.
Well, again, I mean, there's so much there that I wouldn't be able to know. The allegation that a student would be killed is, frankly, that I don't know how to. So I think that's below me responding. I think that the fact speaks for itself, the idea that most of the law speakers with the Second Amendment itself and the interpretation that it was supposed to be for malicious. I think that's a debate that's long been going on. I have three quotes here from Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, and James Monroe. Thomas Jefferson, every citizen should be a soldier. This was a case of the Greeks and the Romans and must be done in every free state. John Adams, arms in the hands of the citizens may be used at individual discretion for the defense of the country, the overthrow of tyranny, or private self-defense. James Monroe, the right of self-defense never ceases. It is among the most sacred and alike necessary to nations and individuals. And like I just said, at the very beginning, I read a report from the Subcommittee on the Constitution of the Committee on the Judiciary of the United States Senate, 97th Congress, Second Session, February 1982, that said that specifically what it protected was an individual right of a private citizen to own and carry firearms in a peaceful manner.
10 seconds.
That's all we're advocating. We do not believe that right should stop at a college campus.
Speaker's time has expired. Representative Craig, 2 minutes.
Thank you, Representative Greenberg, for your statements, and thank you both for coming before us today. I just had a few questions when I immediately looked at this, pushing my own personal opinions aside. My first question is, in Utah, one of the rules is that you have to be 21 years and older, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, now, on a campus of 13,000, where most of the students give or take say 3,000 for the senior class are under the age of 21. I'm not quite sure how effective this would be if we only had, say, a few students walking around in lecture halls with guns. Because I know, yes, some of my lectures sitting in the front, nobody in the lectures, say, Gov 101, Gov 181, all the introduction lectures, are going to have these students who are legally able to carry these guns. Second of all, for me, I really wondered, does this solve the issue, or does it create more problems? We heard a lot about that from Representative Greenberg, and I'm just wondering, I know personally I wouldn't feel very eager to wake up in the morning and go to a class where seven kids around me are carrying pistols and walking around, ready to stop the newest dangers on campus, or whatever have you. But that's only my personal opinion. My question to you is, have you consulted Gannett as to what psychological impacts this may have on students on campus?
Well, we haven't consulted the UN, we haven't consulted the police, however, and
30 seconds.
I think, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Do you feel unsafe when you go to Pyramid Mall or walk around Ithaca, or go to even like a bar in college town? Do you feel unsafe?
I think that's irrelevant. We're talking about on campus right now.
No, but the only thing I ask that, and this is a reference question again, I want you to use evidence.
Sure.
Time has expired. Rebecca Stein.
Can I respond to the question?
There's been a motion to extend the speaker's time. By how much?
2 minutes.
Is there any dissent at the extension of 2 minutes? All in favor of extending the speaker's time by 2 minutes, please raise your hand. There was dissent.
Yay.
I second 1 minute.
All in favor of extending the speaker's time by 2 minutes, please raise your hand. All opposed.
Yeah, I did. That's great.
Thank you.
2 minutes. Go ahead, Achman.
Thank you very much to the Assembly. I appreciate you giving me the time to voice my opinion. I just want to say, Asa, like, it's the same way if I go to a mall right now, I think this fear is unfounded. Because if you go to a mall and walk around Ithaca, you don't know if the person next to you has a concealed weapon or not.
Sure, I'll respond to that. The one thing that I do rest by knowing that there are police officers around.
No. Well, that's fine.
So I'm going to
represent Craig's time.
thank you. So I do rest assured on campus and in the mall, knowing that there are police officers who are trained to do this, not students, 21-year-olds. So my next question is, possibly I think it would be more important for us to get maybe a member of the Cornell University Police Department here to speak either on your behalf or speak on their opinions for this. As well, I think it would be more beneficial if we get more students here to see what is the student's opinions about this issue. We have a few students here, but I'm not sure which listserv this went out to, who's just Cornell Republicans, or if there's everyone on campus. I think when we're talking about Cornell University as our role as representatives, we need to make sure before we vote on this today that everyone has a chance to speak out about this. And for this reason, I move to table this discussion until next week so that we can get more people here to talk about it and see what everyone feels about it.
Thanks.
Many of that, man.
Actually, point of information to share.
Yes.
We have consulted CUPD. I told them that it was new business and that they would have time to formulate a response by next week. Unfortunately, the assembly determined against them. I applaud ASA for this motion.
There's been a motion to table the resolution, and it's been seconded, and there is dissent. All in favor of...
Are we in a discussion now or not?
No, it goes to a vote. All in favor of tabling Resolution 17 until next week, please raise your hand.
Why are we dragging this out?
All opposed. One.
The charade, they should be injured now. The puppies are disgusting.
Order. And abstaining. One. Yes. Resolution 17 is tabled until next week. There is nothing else on the agenda. There's been a motion to adjourn the meeting. It's been seconded. Is there any dissent? Thank you all for coming. The meeting is adjourned.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.